16,000 nurses fired in Zimbabwe for going on strike.
We don't have tools of trade, like gloves. We don't have surgical masks, so we can't work and we can't compromise our health.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. This week, Zimbabwe marked its first Independence Day without Robert Mugabe, whose economic policies over three decades have left the South African nation with 80% unemployment and cash shortages. But new leadership hasn't yet brought a new economic reality. On Monday, thousands of nurses went on strike. On Wednesday, the government fired them all. And today, the nurses' union says it will take legal action if they aren't reinstated. The BBC's Chinga Nyoka is in Harare.
This is not new in Zimbabwe. There have been doctors and nurses and teachers strikes over the last 10 years and so or so over the poor and low wages. But this action by the new government is pretty extraordinary, given the fact that the strike had only been in place for about 2 days.
Why? What is going on with nurses and teachers and their salaries that they're so unhappy?
Junior nurses in this country earn about $284 US a month. The living wage here is estimated to be about $500. Teachers are pretty much the same, and even doctors. The new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, made reference to that fact in his independence speech yesterday and said that he acknowledges their plight, but he said that there needs to be a bit of patience exercised until the economy turns around, and only then will they be able to meet some of the expectations.
You mentioned their Independence Day, the first one without Robert Mugabe. You've got elections coming in July. How much has life changed economically in Zimbabwe?
Over the last 5 months or so, there's been a lot of expectation. Foreign investors seem to have renewed their interest in Zimbabwe. There have been reports that billions of dollars have been committed, but that hasn't really trickled down onto the ground. The cash shortages are still there. The unemployment is still high. And this is where this angst among ordinary Zimbabweans is coming from, that they really are starting to doubt whether Emmerson Mnangagwa will be able to turn their fortunes around.
So what do you think the mood is coming up to those elections? You've had both South Africa and Zimbabwe with new leaders trying to solve these problems of corruption and very sluggish economic growth.
If the voter registration is anything to go by, there's been a spike in the number of people, especially young people who traditionally have been disengaged from politics, who have registered to vote. There's a lot of hope and a lot of expectation. But the question really is now, who do Zimbabweans believe can deliver the promises and the hopes and the expectations that they have?
Chinga Nyoka, let's do the numbers. 16 months of OPEC production cuts are sending crude prices to three-year highs. Oil ministers meet this week to discuss longer-term cooperation. And Turkey's benchmark stock index is flat today after jumping 3% in the last session. President Erdogan announced snap elections a year and a half early to consolidate power. The lira has spiked more than 2% against the dollar. Now, power in Cuba has changed hands from the Castro family to its vice president, Miguel Diaz-Canel. And along with U.S. relations, Cuba's economy is a mess. Mark Entwistle was former Canadian ambassador to Cuba. He's now a managing partner at Acasta Cuba Capital in Toronto.
They have a particularly unique fiscal challenge in that they have a system of two currencies. One is a hard currency denominated national peso, and the other one is their national peso. They are embarked on a process now of unifying the two currencies, finally, to have one national currency. That has caused a great deal of challenge for them in terms of denominating exports and managing their internal accounts, etc. And it means all Cubans have to walk around with literally two different currencies in their pockets.
The incoming vice president, he's an insider. Do you see big changes coming from him economically?
I don't believe that it signifies any particular immediate change in the macroeconomic policy of the country. It is, however, important in the sense that it is the harbinger of generational change. He's not a member of the old mountain guerrilla who were up there in their battle fatigues with Fidel, but he's quite broadly respected by the Cuban people. He's perceived to be fairly moderate, pragmatic. He'd be out with the people riding his bike and worrying about potholes and fixing lights and that kind of thing.
You and I worked out that we were both in Cuba around 1994, I think, when I met a university student called Iralia, who was so much more well-read than me, but completely undernourished. And I'd sneak her into my foreigners-only hotel room to eat well. What are the biggest changes that you've seen in your time in Cuba, and what do you hope to see?
Yes, and the time that you would have met her was a very specific time in Cuba, and I remember it very well. It was just following the collapse of the Soviet Union, and things were quite desperate. There was a fairly broad malnourishment. There wasn't a car on the street. The Cubans, who are remarkably self-resilient, clawed themselves back out of that. There's none of the power outages that you would have experienced when you visited. Operationally and functionally, the country is infinitely more stable. And in terms of going forward, I think we need to see improvement in the wages and the buying power of Cuban citizens. I think the increased role of direct foreign investment is an important part of the puzzle, but it needs to get to a better place than it is now.
Mark Entwistle. Finally, researchers in Singapore got a robot to put together an IKEA chair in 20 minutes. First, it stared at the pieces and failed several times, proving DIY is the ultimate challenge, even for robots. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.